ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland with Kate O'Toole.
Pull up a chair and maybe grab a cuppa. It's good to have a conversation with Queensland historian Helen Gregory. And is it tea or coffee for you this morning, Helen?
It's coffee at the moment. Thank you, Kate. I usually drink an awful lot of tea, but in the morning I do have a couple of cups of coffee.
Me too. I'm with you. And this is what you're looking at this morning when it comes to Queensland's history, coffee and tea, our favourite caffeinated beverages.
Absolutely, Kate. And I think we often think that because the English are devoted tea drinkers, or we think they are, that because they were the first white settlers to come to Australia, they brought the tea habit with them. But the story is slightly different. In fact, coffee was introduced to England before tea. There was a coffee house in Oxford in 1651 and one in London in 1652, but no tea was sold in England until 1657, even though the Dutch had introduced tea to Europe in 1610. But of course, you know, as we know, the English do look up to the royal family. And in 1662, when King Charles II married Catherine of Braganza, tea became fashionable because she was known to be a devoted tea drinker. But coffee came to Australia with the first fleet. They bought coffee seeds. The seeds actually sprouted, but they withered because the climate at Port Jackson didn't really suit them. But experiments with coffee growing continued, and in 1861, the surveyor James Warner was awarded a silver medal at the London International Exhibition for coffee beans that he had grown in his garden at Kangaroo Point in Brisbane.
So 1861, interesting.
Yes, 1861, but it also appears, Kate, that coffee was first grown at Kangaroo Point in 1832, when Brisbane was still a convict settlement.
Right. Okay. That's probably earlier than I thought. I have to say I was with you on the tea idea. You know, I probably got lulled into that English tea drinking misnomer, I suppose, when it comes to the early history of coffee. Was it just grown in the Brisbane area?
Well, by 1879, it was growing near Gympie. In 1880, on the northern slopes of Budrum, and that was due to a very interesting early farmer, a man called Gustav Reby. And he had been born in Hungary, and he was initially a sugar grower on the Meriden Plains, which is probably, we describe it now as the northwest edge of the Caloundra urban area. But at Budrum, when he took up land there, he planted coffee between rows of banana suckers, and he even designed his own machinery to prepare the dried coffee beans for market. And then two other farmers step in, Ernest Burnett and Harry Board, and they planted coffee during the 1890s on Budrum, and this steep and sloping frost-free land and its friable soil were ideal for coffee, and it was a very productive crop if you only had a small landholding. And so they recommended in the 1890s that you could plant 1,000 coffee bushes to the acre, which is less than a hectare, so that would be productive. And they reared the young plants in a sheltered nursery and then planted them in permanent positions among the bananas. And the bananas sheltered the coffee beans for a few years, and when the coffee was big enough to shelter each other, the bananas were pulled out and the coffee remained. And the coffee berries had to ripen to be a deep red. They picked them, dried them in trays in the sun for at least 3 weeks, then husked, and the bean inside was roasted. Harry Board imported machinery to process his crop, and he also had it packed for market. And so Budrum became known Australia-wide for its coffee. In the 1890s and the early years of the 20th century, there was actually a tax on imported coffee, and that placed the local industry in a pretty good position. Gustav Reby recommended that the duty on imported coffee should be distributed to assist the pioneers of the industry in Queensland, because he was worried that some of the coffee produced overseas, where labour costs were cheaper, would still be a stiff competition for the local product,
wow,
even with the import duty.
I'm just thinking about how they would have to, how long it would take to bring coffee over by ship at that stage, and how difficult, and yet even so, that idea of cheap labour was an issue in the market at that time. Interesting.
Yes, absolutely. But a very clever engineer, a man called Price Jones, invented a machine to double Gustav Reiby's output. He also constructed a huge water wheel, which harnessed the power of the mountain streams to operate all kinds of agricultural machinery. But coffee from Budrum was also part of the Indian and Colonial Exhibition in London. And a coffee sample, Mr. J.K. Burnett said, received a certificate of merit and a bronze medal, and that was in 1886. And by 1907, the Director of Tropical Agriculture pronounced that Budrum coffee was the best produced in Australia. So that was a nice pat on the back for them. But sadly, the fear that the imported labour would be too tough competition started really to make an impact. But some coffee growers persisted, and in 1934, the Duke of Gloucester surprised a coffee grower called Mr. George Burnett and Mr. J.J. Simpson by visiting their coffee farm. So they got the seal of royal approval. But by then, coffee was also being grown in other parts of Queensland, on the Atherton Tablelands near Mackay and at Bingle Bay near Cairns. And by 1899, 29 coffee growers had a meeting in Cairns and formed the first Coffee Growers Association. So they were very serious, and they kept going till the 1920s. But their coffee growing declined. There was a labour shortage, climate was challenging, and during the Second World War, it was very hard to get their coffee shipped either interstate in Australia or overseas. And of course, many of those growers in the north had relied on South Sea Islanders to be the labour force. And of course, that was outlawed in the early years of the 20th century. And the climate was pretty cruel. Some of the higher plantations were frosted. There were droughts and a series of cyclones. For instance, the tsunami that hit Mackay and Bowen in 1918 caused huge devastation. It was a 12-metre wall of water rolling over the coast. So that was very, very difficult.
That's terrifying to think about now, even, isn't it?
Oh, isn't it? The Queensland government did offer the northern coffee growers some support in 1920, but it did decline. But there was a resurgence of interest in the 1980s, and now Mareeba Atherton region produces most of Australia's annual harvest.
And now we just casually say, I'll have a, you know, double flat white and don't even think anything about it.
Well, precisely. And we've got actually a lot to thank our immigrant communities from Italy and Greece for our modern enthusiasm for coffee. For instance, in 1950, Luigi Merlo set out to make a new life in Australia, and he started in the cane fields near Mackay and moved to Brisbane. His eldest son, Gino, opened Cafe Milano in the Queen Street Mall in 1960, and the centrepiece at the Milano was a gleaming La San Marco espresso machine, the very first of its kind in Queensland. And so Gino Milano introduced Queensland to the more sophisticated types of enjoying coffee. And then, of course, in 1989, Emmanuel Kokoris and Emmanuel Drivas, who have Greek ancestry, they were searching for a cup of coffee very late at night. They were unsuccessful, and they planned a new business venture, which they called the Coffee Club. And of course, that's now franchised all over Australia. And then in this century, a young entrepreneur, Philip DeBella, started a small coffee roasting operation in Brisbane, in Bowen Hills, and became Australia's largest coffee roasting manufacturing and distribution enterprise. So we've got a very proud coffee history here,
yes,
in Queensland.
I wonder what a cup of coffee at those very earliest years would have tasted like in that in sort
yes.
of 1832, 1880. I wonder what that sort of a cup of coffee, because I imagine that there wouldn't have been loads of loads of sugar lying around to sort of put heaps of sugar in coffee or anything like that? I wonder. Anyway.
Well, that's a very good question about the sugar. There's a lot of sugar grown in Queensland from the 1860s on, but before that, I'm not sure. And, of course, a lot of them would have relied on the old method of warming coffee grounds in an enamel saucepan, pouring hot water onto it and then straining it, and that's your cup of coffee.
And how good exactly is this strainer? How gritty is that, cup
exactly.
of coffee?
And so you see, that was our modern coffee is much more sophisticated.
And what about tea?
Yes, well, tea was interesting. There was also tea brought to Australia on the First Fleet, but really, until the second half of the 20th century, very little tea was actually grown in Australia, in contrast to the coffee. But it's interesting to realise that the famous Bushells tea brand has its origins in Queensland. In 1883, Alfred Bushell opened the first Australian tea shop in Queensland. But then, towards the end of the 19th century, his sons moved their enterprise to Sydney and began selling tea commercially. And the Bushells Tea Company became Australia's first indigenous tea company. But that started in Queensland, which I hadn't realised. And then in 1884, the four Cutton brothers established a commercial tea plantation at Bingle Bay near Cairns, where the coffee growers had been active. And they arrived at Bingle Bay in 1882 and realised that it had a great potential for farming. And they also grew spices, tropical fruit and some coffee. But there was a bit of a lapse until 1958 when Dr. Alan Maruf, who came to Queensland from India, started commercial tea plantings in the Narada Valley south of Cairns. He had initially settled near Innisfail, where he realised that the lush tropical environment was very like tea-growing regions in India. He was a medical doctor, but he had also been awarded a gold medal for botany when he was studying at Calcutta University. So he really had a foot in both camps. And he remained an enthusiastic botanist and was very committed to the idea of developing a tea industry for Australia. And he heard of the Cutton brothers and their lost plantation near Bingle Bay, and he decided he'd find it. And so deep in the rainforest, he found thriving coffee plants. Some were as high as 15 metres, so it's clear they hadn't been harvested for a very long time.
Oh, the tea plant, were they tea plants or coffee plants?
Yes, tea plants.
Okay, yep.
Huge tea plants. And he collected hundreds of seedlings and seeds, returned to Innisfail to start a nursery. And he bought 130 hectares of land in the Narada Valley, which is in the foothills of the Atherton Tableland, and planted his very first tea. And he worked with local engineers to develop how to harvest the tea mechanically, which of course was crucial to the survival of a labour-intensive industry in Australia. And he used a very innovative 5-ton mechanical harvester to bring in his first crop. And he approached the trading company, Burns Philp, a very famous Queensland company, to invest in his business. And they formed a joint venture called Narada Tea Estates and opened Australia's first tea processing factory in 1971. And then another company, Tea Estates of Australia, started planting right beside the Narada plantation. And in 1973, Tea Estates of Australia bought Narada Tea Estates, and they stopped selling bulk tea and started marketing the tea we know under the Narada brand. So they opened a small packing factory near Innisfail, and then a larger factory at Glen Allen near Malanda, and a huge packaging plant in Brisbane in 1992. So Narada Tea became the largest supplier of Australian-grown tea, and they now have more than 400 hectares of tea planted in the Cairns region. And they produce 1.5 million kilograms of black tea.
Oh, goodness, that's a lot of tea. John Anderson from Harvey Bay has given us a call. G'day, John.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
I'm well. What did you want to add to the story of coffee and tea this morning?
Well, my wife's just been listening to the radio, as we often do, of course, the ABC. And I'm the historian at the Harvey Bay Historical Village and Museum. And we have a very, very big, large display concerning the coffee industry in Harvey Bay with the Bromley family, from the early part of the 1900s at Dundarran, they grew commercial quantities of coffee out there, marketed under the brand name of Mecca, M-E-C-C-A, won many international prizes around the, I think, 1908. There was the Franco-British exhibition over in London. They took out gold medals, and we actually have, you know, containers and or the original containers of the coffee that went over to England in those days. As well, the museum has all of the machinery for taking the raw beans, taking the husk off it, and processing it.
And so, John, given that the tea and coffee consumption, levels of consumption we have these days, what fascinates you when you look at all this old machinery and these old stories from the Hervey Bay area? What do you find most interesting about it?
Well, it was fascinating to think that, you know, in those early days, the Bromley family, and there was quite a large family of them, but they were very, very innovative and did many things in the Dundarran area and the rich red soil out there, Red Hill, where they grew the coffee, had sawmills, and, you know, it's just fascinating to think that they were winning gold medals worldwide in the early part of the 1900s, and we still have this machinery that people come and are fascinated with. We actually have in the museum grounds coffee trees growing from the original Bromley plantation. You know, and people, it's quite amazing when the seeds come on that people have never seen a coffee tree. And we very often take a seed off, break it in two, and show the two beans inside, covered with the husk. And you know, people are quite fascinated because all they're used to is putting the grounds in the coffee machine and turning the button.
John, can I ask you, when did the Bromley plantation stop its own production? How long were they producing coffee?
For quite a number of decades, but probably, I think, up into about the 30s or 40s.
Yes, it does seem that a lot of coffee growing in Queensland was very seriously interrupted by the Second World War and shipping problems and labour problems. Was that the case with the Bromleys?
The main problem with the plantations at Dundarran was as the land was cleared and development took over, they got a lot of sea air, salt air, and that destroyed the actual plantation trees. So that, I think, was the end of the actual coffee industry in Dundarran. But I mean, it's a very integral part of the history of Hervey Bay, and anyone that's at the bay any time wants to come to have a look at the Hervey Bay Historical Village and Museum. You can actually see coffee trees growing there from the original Bromley trees, and also many actual items from the Bromley family.
How fascinating, John! Thank you so much for contributing. Great to hear.
No worries, great to talk to you.
Great to hear that context too, and also Helen about that idea that sometimes if you have a sensitive crop, even it's sort of changing the microclimate of where it's grown from development in the surrounding areas can affect things.
Yeah. Absolutely, Kate. I found that extremely interesting, and the fact that the historical village really has all stages in coffee production. No, that was extremely interesting.
Helen Gregory, thank you so much for bringing us this slice of Queensland history once again, and I'll leave you to enjoy the rest of your coffee this morning. Thank
you. I'll enjoy it. Thank you, Kate.
You're with Kate O'Toole on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.